Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene with Wole and my co-host Ray Jeezy Will Tease out, and we are part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. What's going on, Ray?
All is well, my friend. Getting closer to the football season. You know, America's number one sport is back, my dude. So we excited. The pre and post game shows are back for the urban sports scene. Check those out.
Definitely.
Oh, the pre game is not back. The post game is back, but the pre game is something new.
Facts. And we about to move from audio to video soon. So check that. Check us out, man.
Yeah, I got
to
shave now all the time.
It's okay, man. Sometimes I'm gonna have to like the Muslim coming out of jail reading the Quran type. Look, I'm gonna have it. It's gonna be all. It's gonna be thorough some days.
I won't go there, but you'll have a beard.
I'll have a beard.
That's cool, brother.
Hey man, Empire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Commanders Insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today Insider Mike Jones. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Hey, make sure you subscribe to The Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. I stole that. I don't even know why I did that. Hey, make sure you hit the red subscribe button when you're watching the video. When we go live on YouTube, make sure you hit that red subscribe button and also like the video. Hey, this show can be found on Podcast DC, the local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Empire shows as well as other great content.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene. You can tweet me personally at @UrbanSports_Ray and hit us up on IG at Urban Sports Scene and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page.
Hey, also join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. Hey, let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We'll chat with Sports Journey's Washington Commanders reporter Lake Lewis Jr. about the Commanders' preseason victory over the Baltimore Ravens. Then at 8:35, we'll talk about the Washington Nationals giving manager Davey Martinez a contract extension. The Nats are also working on a deal for GM Mike Rizzo. Rizzo's going to hopefully get an extension for this team. He's done such a great job for the Nats. Talk Nats, Kevin Nibley will jump on the show to join us. And then finally at 8:50, we'll talk about Las Vegas Aces star Aja Wilson dropping 53 points last night and whether she is already a WNBA all-time great. All right, but right now we have Sports Journey's Washington Commanders reporter Lake Lewis Jr. on the line. What's going on, Lake?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing today?
Oh, we good, man. How are you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there. Just another busy day.
I know, right? How's practice?
It was okay. You know, same old. Like, I think everybody's ready for, you know, them to drop this thing down to 53.
Yeah, I know that's right.
Lake, I was just mentioning our post-game show that we do, the Urban Sports Scene, and we were mentioning you on there recently because there's a lot of chatter that Jahan Dotson is the most talented receiver in the building for the Commanders. I know that's your guy. So I know we have questions, Wole, but I gotta get his thoughts on that. Do you think he's surpassing Terry McLaurin already?
No. No.
I'm surprised, man.
We are. That's coming from a Penn Stater too. No. You know, I just think that Deshaun, my God, I saw Deshaun at the game the other night. That's who Jahan's reminded me of. You know what I mean?
Jackson.
Just impact, like smooth impact. Get the ball in his hands and watch some magic happen. You know, he's that dynamic with the ball. So but he still has, you know, some things to get better at, you know, which is scary, you know. But I will say this. I think Terry's the proven commodity, of course, you know, and he's a dog. I think Jahan's made Terry better, and I think Terry's making Jahan better. They're starting to become, and I think by mid-season people will see it. They have a great coordinator now. They have an adequate quarterback and get the ball out anywhere and everywhere. So now I think you're going to see them and their names start to come up as one of the best tandems in the league that maybe could rival a T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. Oh, wow. I really feel like that. I think that they have that kind of talent. People keep saying, oh, my God, no, they're not there. Well, they haven't had a quarterback, and they haven't had a real NFL offensive mind, you know, to run plays. So now they have both, and you're going to see these guys eat. Watch.
Best receiving corner in the league, Lake, when you factor in all four guys with Curtis Samuel and Dayami, I think it's the best receiving corner league.
I mean, listen, they have to prove it. We think talent-wise, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly. But I think you got to prove it on the field. And right now, they're still behind Cincinnati. They're still behind Miami. You know, there's some teams out there that have some cold receivers in bunches, you know. But when people say, oh, they're, you know, Cowboys, you know, in the division, the Eagles. Yeah, the Eagles receiving core might be better right now because they're proven. But just from a sheer pound for pound, talent for talent, I don't know too many teams that are going to rival these four guys here. And now that Dayami's found his mojo in this offense, it's just going to be more dynamic to watch these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I feel you, Lake. I know you don't want to say it, but I'll say it for you, man. Jahan going to be the dude. I'm sorry. I am, and you know I'm a Michigan dude, but Jahan is going to be the dude. I can see it. It's just he's just too smooth. And literally, real talk, there is nothing he can't do on the football field. There's just it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that he can't do on the football field. And you guys remember when I told you when they drafted the kid, everyone was like, oh, you loving him because he's Penn State.
Yeah, I said that. I was wrong.
So 3 years ago, I used to broadcast up at Penn State, you know, with Blair Thomas, a good friend of mine. I used to be a Heisman Trophy runner-up back at Penn State. And he kept saying, this was during that time frame where you saw, you know, Allen Robinson was still doing something in the league. Now I'm going brain dead. But there were a bunch of receivers that had come out of Penn State that, you know, were doing really well in the league. And he kept telling me, man, this kid right here, you know, so people don't realize this. Jahan originally out of high school signed with UCLA, Pennsylvania kid. Was going to UCLA and people were like, he's got that Reggie Bush in him, you know, like, you know, makes people miss and he's just smooth, you know, and did it all in high school, was playing receiver, got balls out the backfield, did everything. And somehow James Franklin Penn State flipped him, you know, and got him to come there. And obviously the rest is history. But I really truly in my heart believe that he has a chance to go down as the greatest receiver to ever come out of Penn State. That's how talented this kid is. And you know what? He knows it now. You hear him talking. That's not arrogance. That's confidence. You know? And he's like, oh, yeah, when I saw they had a safety over me, yeah, man, you know. Like he said, no, I don't feel like I can be covered by anybody, let alone a safety. That's what you want to hear, you know? So you can tell I'm excited, man, because I just feel like finally we'll be able to see players here not be, how can I say, saddled by something that they needed. So, for instance, we had Deshaun here. You had Pierre here. And Kirk Cousins was just starting to come into being a starter, and Kirk would fold up at the end of games. We knew that. And matter of fact, it's funny. I mentioned Deshaun. I was with him at the game the other day, and we talked about it. And I was just like, I still think you can play. He was like, I do too, but you know, there's politics, blah, blah, blah. He said, so I'm retired. He said, I'm good now. I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor. You know, I'm like, good man. But I told him, I said, bro, just imagine had you played your career with the same quarterback. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, like, the one thing that Jamar Chase's and T. Higgins have going for them is they've been in the same system with the same bad dude, Joe Burrow.
That's true.
You know, you look at what's going on in, you know, other teams. You look, Philadelphia, you know, now Devonta Smith, Brown, A.J. Brown, they're going to be in the same setup with Jalen Hurts for the foreseeable future. That stuff makes guys play better when you know that you can depend on things. Terry is going on his seventh quarterback. Seventh. And he's still cold. So now, if he has any kind of synergy now that he's developing with Howell, and Howell's there for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, imagine what these kids are going to put up numbers-wise.
True. Very true.
Yeah.
So like, let's get into, like, the – let's get into to what happened on Monday night. You know, the Commanders ended the Baltimore Ravens' 24-game preseason winning streak with a game-winning field goal by Joey Sly, giving the Commanders a 29-28 victory. What were your main takeaways from that game?
Man, you know, this was a microcosm of what we've been seeing in camp. Mm. You know, this is a scrappy football team that – They get better as the game goes on. And that's a good sign because in previous years, they got worse as the game went on. They withered away. So maybe now that cracking of the whip that Eric's been doing, guys are starting to see, you know what? These are backups that pulled that game out. That's what you want. You want to see guys fighting to the very end, tooth and nail, and they did that. And nobody can throw out this crap about this was a preseason game because the Ravens value their preseason games, clearly, for them to win 24 in a row. So don't do that. Yeah. So that's what you want. You want to see mental fortitude. You want to see guys that aren't quitting, aren't giving up, and keep fighting, keep battling. And you saw that. And then you saw Jake Fromm, who struggled a lot during camp. He pretty much won the game for him, you know, with his play. That's what you want to see. And to me, that says that guys are receiving their coaching. That means that they're believing. And you saw how happy these guys were afterwards. They understood the magnitude of that win, even though it was a preseason game. It was important for the region for them. It was important for the fan base under new ownership that they finally saw something that maybe can translate into the regular season. So what did I see? I did. I walked away feeling like this was a team that showed that they could be tough and keep fighting as the game went on.
Lake is on fire today. Listen, I wanted to ask a sidebar question. You mentioned region and new regime. I wanted to see what your thoughts are about should this game, whether it's preseason or regular season, be scheduled every year, because that stadium atmosphere for a preseason game was amazing. Just the entire game felt like something that was more meaningful than just a meaningless preseason game, if that makes sense. I think it's something that the Baltimore DC region needs on a consistent basis with these two franchises. What's your thoughts?
Absolutely. And I think it'll happen now. I know for things that owners didn't necessarily weren't on the best of terms, you know. And so I think it was more so that Baltimore had already kind of established its stake in the region, and they didn't need to help out an organization that is at one point used to always overshadow them, you know. So, and you can't really say overshadowed them, because when the Ravens came around in the mid-90s, late-90s, you know, they were in a Super Bowl in 2000, winning it. So, and since 2000, this outfit in D.C. has been, you know, something that you put in your garbage disposal. So, you know, so I think, you know, now that new ownership group in there, you saw that they had the practice against each other. That stuff never would have happened if Dan Snyder was the owner. Let me just flat out tell you that. It would have never happened, you know, to see those Ravens guys in the building, to see the media, some guys that I knew talking with them. It was just a different atmosphere. And I think it needs to happen for the region. It's good for the region. You know, it's good for bragging rights. And at the end of the day, Washington still plays in Maryland. So, you know, now they can say, at least for the preseason, they're the Kings of Maryland.
Hey, chill, bro. But I did say iron sharpens iron. The fact that the Ravens take preseason so serious, which is a great thing for the organization, their culture, I believe that helps the Washington organization as it turns a new – a new chapter, a new page in this chapter with the owner that was lit at the game, by the way. He was hilarious. But another person that was lit was Sam Howell. He played an excellent game. Again, we're talking about the Ravens. Anytime you play against them, it's a great measuring stick. 18 for 25, 188 yards passing with two TDs. Even though it wasn't the Ravens starters, were you surprised that Sam Howell still played the whole first half? Were you surprised he played that well?
No, not at all. And he, you know, obviously the more reps he can get, the better he'll be, the more prepared he'll be. It doesn't matter if they were backups. And I hate when I hear fans say this, because when you get on the field, you're not saying to yourself, that guy over here playing corner was a third round pick. The safety back there was a seventh round pick. You're not thinking that way. You're thinking like what assignments you got to do, what you need to get accomplished on the field. And, you know, if people really want to start doing that, then I'm going to remind them they're the same people that said Sam Howell was going to be trash because he was a fifth round draft pick. So don't flip it now and say, oh, well, he was doing it against backups. He was doing it against fifth round players, just like him. And he proved that fifth round grade was pretty bad. So I just think that you have to give credit where credit is due. And the bottom line is the Ravens wanted that game. And Washington took it from them. When they went up 28-20, Baltimore, I'm talking about, the crowd was pro Ravens. You could see it was, you know, they wanted it.
Yeah.
And then Washington fought and came back and got it. You could see there was some upset Ravens at the end of that game. There's no question about it. They valued their preseason. No one wants to see a 24-game winning streak in. You know, that's all you're used to.
Yeah.
So now they got to prepare this week for their third preseason game in Baltimore. As losers. That's just the way it goes.
I said losers. So, like, how you do that?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know, you lost, so now you preparing to do something you haven't done since 2015. And that's preparing for a game as a loser.
Oh,
and Washington can prepare for the chance to run the table in their preseason, and people are going to say, well, they're always, you know, off-season winners, and not preseason. No. Not preseason. Oh, and this is a different setup for them. You know, this was the perfect start for a potential turnaround for this organization. And I just want to throw this out there, guys. I'm looking at the Eagles as the blueprint for what Washington can be here. And what I mean by that is they get Jalen Hurts, and he sat until they put him in the end of the season behind Carson. Remember that?
Yeah, true.
And you saw flashes. Well, the second year, they finished the season strong under Jalen Hurts, and they made the playoffs. They didn't do much once they got in, but people were like, this is a team to watch. You know, they might have some young players. They can continue to grow. And then in the third year, boom, you're in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is Washington should have been in the playoffs last year with just crap, you know, quarterback play and really piss poor play calling. Okay? So now you have two things that – upgrade a quarterback, which Sam Howell's a legitimate upgrade over what they had, and then you have a clear, sheer upgraded offensive coordinator. Okay, why should this team not think they should be a playoff team? I literally was texting today with my boy Pete Rock, and he's obviously New York guy, Giants fan, and he said, "I'm impressed with Sam Howell. I swear to you, I have it on my text," and he said, Washington definitely should be a playoff team. There should be four teams in the NFC in the playoffs this year. And I said it actually should have happened last year. So there's no reason for me to think that they shouldn't be a playoff team, because there's really only two juggernauts in the NFC, and that's the Eagles and the 49ers. And I think the Lions are going to be good. But outside of that, this thing's wide open. Why can't they get in?
I went even further after the game, and I said the way – Sam Howell is improving from week to week, going back to the end of last season. I think in terms of NFC East, the division, I think he'll be competing with Dak to say who's the second best quarterback in the entire division. I'm not sure if that's reaching, but I feel as though right now, Dak in pressure moments, you mentioned Kirk earlier, like he folded in the games. I think Dak has that sort of moniker now, so or reputation. So why can't Sam Howell compete to be one of the best quarterbacks in the division? I think it's totally possible.
Well, let's just say this. From a production standpoint, you're going to have to put Daniel Jones as the second best, in my opinion. Just from a sheer production. you know, because he's done it with no. But he's done it with no talent around him. I mean, he's got Saquon, of course. We are got to do that.
It's Saquon's the reason. It ain't Daniel Jones, though.
but what I'm saying is they still are always competitive, and they made the playoffs last year with no wide receivers. Literally, come on, you know. So he runs the football, Daniel Jones.
Okay.
You know, he's a very good. A very good guy with his legs, you know, running the ball. So what I'm saying is, from a proven commodity standpoint, Dak and Jones are clearly better than Hal. But from a talent standpoint, no. We think this guy could be up there with Jalen, probably, you know, from a sheer talent standpoint. Okay. He just got to prove it. So I would say this, guys, as opposed to saying that Sam is the second best quarterback, how about just saying Washington's competing to be the second best team in the division behind Philadelphia?
Well,
because I clearly think that that's what's happening.
I feel like by the end of the season, we may be having that discussion. Let me rephrase if I didn't necessarily put it out there correctly the first time. So that's what I meant. But I just I'm impressed by him. I was always impressed by him. I thought he was a second round pick. So I didn't understand why he dropped to the fifth. I really didn't. And I'm not a fan of this team. I'm a fan of Atlanta. And I thought he would go before Ritter, to be real. I thought Ritter was a third round pick.
These scouts, man, you know, some of them are great. Give them credit. Some of them aren't. And some of them base everything on – they base everything on wins and losses. And this is my thing. Sam Howell proved to you when his junior year – when he had NFL talent around him at receiver and running back, they were legit. North Carolina was a team people didn't want to see. Uh-huh. And he ran it under a pro system under Mack Brown, the same system that Eric Bieniemy brought from Kansas City, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Same principles, concepts. Sam Howell's just playing fast football because he doesn't have to think. He knows the playbook, literally. So you're going to get a full open Kansas City playbook, you know. Those things help. And now you can see they don't have to babysit him. They don't have to coddle him on the field. They can just turn him loose. And he's going to have some ups and downs. Everything's not going to be, you know, what he did the other night. But I have a tendency to believe, you know, I posted something on my Twitter. There was a stat with him. He's one of six quarterbacks since like 2000 in college football to have over 90 touchdowns and less than 25 interceptions. For his career, this is in college. That shows you that the guy just doesn't turn the ball over. There's some guys that just won't turn the ball over. And he might be what they thought they were going to get in Alex Smith years ago when Alex Smith wasn't going to be a guy that was going to throw for 400 or 500 yards, but he was going to give you everything at that position and be a leader. And guys galvanized around him. And then unfortunately, we know about the injury and it changed the fortunes of the franchise. But before that injury, that team was on its way. You could see it was working. Well, now think about it. That's what Scott Turner. So now you got Eric Bieniemy doing this. And I'm telling you guys, we ain't even seen the playbook.
He looks like the head coach to me.
I know, he like the head coach.
He looks like the head coach.
I think everybody know that. And I think that's probably why. Let me stop. I don't even want to start that up. I still got to go out
there. We're not going to go there. We're going to show Riverboat some respect.
But that whole player stuff, I don't know about all that now. I ain't going to go further with it.
Yeah.
But I don't know how. I don't even know how accurate that really was. But that's all I'm going to say.
He got that inside hate going on.
You know, sometimes when you start feeling somebody breathing on your neck,
but you brought
sometimes
him in.
People react differently.
I
feel like you had to bring him in.
But Eric's my dude, though. That's my guy. And
he look like that guy.
We've talked, yeah. And he's legit, man. And he told me verbatim, "Lake, it's supposed to be hard, right?" And I'm like, hell yeah, you can crack that whip harder, you know. I just think that when you've been trash, you don't have anything to say but yes, sir. That's it.
Yeah.
He asked you to do it because, you know, literally he could come out to that practice field blinding people with his rings. But, you know, because he's had success, immediate success over the past 3 years with Kansas City. Don't give me that, oh, it was Andy Reid, it was Patrick Mahomes. because if it was somebody else, maybe looked a little different, you would be giving that man all the credit for being in that room. He still was in those meetings. He still helped implement game plans, and he was still a big part of those guys' success as men. And they've come out and said it. I'm not saying anything that they haven't said. Mahomes, Kelsey, Tariq Hill, they've all come out and said it. Nicole Hardman, all of them, that how great this guy's been as far as in their lives. That's what you want. You want somebody to motivate you and challenge you to be better every day, because it's going to make you better in the end, in the long run. And I think you're seeing that. That's how that game was. It was a microcosm of all of this stuff. They fought, and they finally pulled the game out.
Lake, let's go to the other side of the ball. Cody Barton, Jamin Davis, both played with the second team defense. What were your thoughts on the linebackers' play, and honestly, the entire defense? How do you think the entire defense looked? You said already it didn't matter the starters, fifth rounders, fourth rounders, whatever. Some were a bit concerned after that performance from the start of the game where the Ravens just marched down the field. So what were your thoughts?
I mean, they didn't play a lot of starters, man. I mean, you know, that's what you want to say. And, you know, I too was like, man, this second unit should be better, should be doing more, especially up front. But then I had to realize there's never going to be a time in a game during the regular season where the whole second unit's on the field at the same time, you know, especially up front. You're going to have those backups sprinkled in with Deron and John Allen and Chase and Montez. So it's never going to be they're just out there on an island by themselves. And I think we had to remember that. You know, so for me, my eyes translated to the skill set guys, because those are the guys in these games you get a chance to see who can do more of. And I think for Jartavius Martin or Quan Martin to do what he did, you know, really was needed. You know, they wanted to see the playmaking ability. And you saw that on that interception. He was beat.
Yeah, it was beat.
You know, but still stayed with the play, made the interception, and then had the wherewithal to turn it upfield. Uh-huh. That's the kind of stuff that you want to see. You know, Forbes makes plays. You can see it. Yeah. And I think for the veterans watching from the sidelines who weren't playing, it gives them hope that, you know, maybe now we knew in years past the D-line needed to finish the play. They needed to get the sack, you know, because there was really no hope in the secondary. Now you're starting to see, you know, these young guys in that secondary, Derek Forrest, you know, another one, Cam Curl, you know, their secondary is young and uber talented, you know. So now you got ball hawks out there. You got guys that can make plays, finish plays. So now your D linemen are going to tee off even more because they know, you know, they might have to finish the play to get their stat, you know, because if not, somebody in the secondary going to get it. So, you know, these are good problems to have. And I think for Washington, this is something that we haven't seen in a long time. You know, this has always been a top-heavy football team, even with the days of Mike Shanahan when they made the playoffs, the time they made it with Jay Gruden. You know, you had 10 dogs, you know, and then there was a big drop-off after that. Well, I think now the depth on this team is really going to start to show, and it's young depth, so it's going to be around for a long time. You know, there's going to be some tough cuts that have to be made that people, for players that fans may have thought were good enough to make the team, where they're not going to be good enough to make the team. They're going to be put on the practice squad or just outright released. That's a good sign. That means that you've really turned over your roster to be competitive from top to bottom.
So, Lake, in terms of the linebacker play, though, between Cody Barton and Jamin, like, how did you think they looked? Because I had questions about how Cody looked, because I felt like he wasn't great.
He's not a cover guy. I mean, not to cut you. I was just going to say, Cody's not a cover guy.
Okay.
More of a tackler, or a straight line tackler. Uh-huh. Jamin is a guy that can cover. I just don't, and this isn't to knock those guys, those aren't upper echelon linebackers, you know, that are going to, they're not guys that people are game planning for. Make sure you know that. They're going to game plan for that defensive front, and they are going to game plan for where certain guys are in that secondary. They're going to want to see where Cam Curl is. They're going to want to see what this young kid Forbes is. They're going to try Forbes early and find out. He's that guy. So with that said, the linebackers are going to be exploited. They're going to try to get balls in the middle of the field. And the teams in this division have went and made sure their tight ends are set for that. You know, you got one in Dallas. You know, look, the Giants went out and brought in Waylon, you know, so they know to attack this defense is about what's in the middle of the field. So, yeah, the linebackers are going to have to do well, but I'm going to tell y'all right now, you didn't see it a lot in preseason, but when they run this Cinco package and they do certain things, you're going to see a lot of five down linemen or maybe one standing up and one linebacker. So I don't think you're going to see two of them on the field quite a bit at the same time.
All right, so, Lake, real quick before we let you go, the Commanders play the Bengals on Saturday. Do you think they should play Sam Howell?
Yes, I do. Okay. I think you give him a series. I mean, yes, he's the starting quarterback, but he needs reps. He needs game reps. He just needs to get as many minutes on that field. It's like driving a car, you know. And I do have one. But, you know, if you got a young kid that has, you know, just driving or starting to drive, the only way they're going to become a better driver is to what? Drive the car. So, you know, he's a quarterback that has to be able to just get those reps, get those mental blocks out, and it'll make him better. Obviously, if he goes out there in the first drive, he's struggling or whatever, you don't want him to have that being the lasting impression of his night. So then you might be forced to play him again. But the only reason I might say he doesn't play was because Jacoby Brissett was so bad that they might want him to get a half under his belt to just get his confidence, because he looked bad. So, and then Jake Fromm finished the game up in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, Jacoby did struggle. We had a poll. We had a poll about that. 16% said yes, 84% said no. It's wild, because either way, I mean, I wouldn't be mad either way. I was leaning towards playing him, like, just for a series. But then on the other side, I'm like, I could see him not playing. Like, his last performance was so good. I mean, you've covered this team through camp, through the preseason game, so you've seen him. He's pretty much been consistent, I can only imagine, right? He's been the same dude since camp to now, right?
Yeah, I mean, Brissett is he's a pro, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he's a pro. But I think I kept telling everyone there was no quarterback competition. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. It was Sam's job to lose, you know. There was no quarterback competition. And Brissett, I think he ultimately knew that, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been a career backup. And why would you go out and get a career backup to all of a sudden become a starter? And you need this for your job if you're Ron Rivera. No, he brought him in here because Jacoby Brissett's one of the nicest guys you will ever meet in your life. I mean, he's just a class act, and he's a team player. And he's going to help Sam Howell quite a bit. I mean, already has, you know. So that's what that was. You know, but you just, you know, you just hope that, you know, if you have to get a game or two or maybe three out of Jacoby, you can do that. But you don't want him to be your starter for 16, 17 games. And that's not disrespecting him, guys. That's just saying what he is. He's a really good backup quarterback, and he's a pro for sure. But they don't want him to be the guy for sure. That's Sam Howell.
Facts. Hey, Lake, man, thanks for being on. How can folks catch you on social media? And how can they catch your content, period, man?
Man, I wish I could tell y'all, but it's something about to happen, and I can't wait to announce it. But anyway, until then, you can go to my social media, Lake Lewis on Twitter, Lake Lewis Jr., Instagram, Facebook, and Sports Journey. The new site is up.
Yeah, I saw it. Looks nice, man. Looks dope.
Thank you. So it's up there. We're getting ready to get Surge. You know, Surge the shooter.
Yeah.
Getting ready to get some great pictures and stuff awesome. Up there as well. So, yeah, you can go to sportsjourney.com on all social medias as well. And, of course, the After Practice podcast. And then we have an event coming up on the 1st of September in Herndon. I'm having a kickoff show there, a kickoff podcast show. And I'd love to formally right now on your show invite you two to come on out, man, and I'll have you on the show with me.
What day is that? That's a what?
That's a Friday. Friday.
Oh, I think I can do that. I can swing it. I think I can swing it Friday.
Okay. It's at 5 o'clock, though. It's a little early.
5 o'clock? I have to take off.
But, yeah, I'd love to have y'all come out there. Right. I want my pod platform. It's supposed to be an every Friday event type thing. And, you know, I want to spotlight some of the guys that I know who have been grinding, doing great things, got good shows, and it'll give you a chance to, you know, be able to be seen by some people that may not know about all the good work that you guys are doing.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know what? Yeah, definitely text me the address, and I should be okay. There. I should definitely be there.
All right, sounds good.
It's right before my surgery and everything, bro. So
yeah, get your easy pass out, bro.
I got an easy pass.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah, make sure you keep it in the days. Oh, yeah, that's
all
I'm saying.
I got a little secret you can do, but I can't tell you.
Oh man.
All right. Hey, he means just take the silver line, guys. Listen.
Right, thank you.
Take the silver line through Tyson's. It extends to Herndon. Man, like, I'm surprised. Like, I ain't gonna lie, man. I'm a little surprised. But.
Easy pass. What's that?
No, I got an easy pass. I got an easy anywhere. I can't waste the easy pass. I got one. I can't waste.
Nah, we got three, man. Don't get me wrong. We got them in the
hey, five. Text more later. I would like to know.
You said you want to know.
I kind of want to know, even though you know what.
Mm-mm. You said I kind of want to know.
Not doing it. I got. Yeah, I have easy pass.
Off the air combo right there.
Yeah, that's after practice.
That's after practice talk, man.
Exactly. That's like I'm super after practice. After left the facility.
That's crazy.
Oh man. Right, hey, Lake man, thanks, man. We gonna rap. We definitely gonna rap about that. I should be on there.
Okay, sounds good, man. I appreciate
you. I appreciate you. Appreciate you, Lake. Thanks, man.
All right, take care. All right.
Take care. Hey, again, his Twitter handle was at Lake Lewis. It is at Lake Lewis. All right. You want me to do it or I do it?
Oh, Lake. We always go to overtime with Lake. It's crazy. But yeah, I don't even know where we are right now. I know we're supposed to be talking next.
Talking next. Kevin Nibley will tell us why Nats GM Mike Rizzo. Is possibly about to get an extension, and why Davey Martinez definitely got the extension after the break. You listen to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. You dig? Deuces.
Yeah. Ride. Feel me now, listen. Mama loved me, Pop left me, Mickey fed me, Annie dressed me, Eric fought me, made me tougher. Love you for that, man. No matter what, bruh. Marcy raised me, and whether right or wrong, streets gave me all I write in this song. Hootie babysitted, changed my diapers. Gil introduced me to the game that changed my life up. East Trenton grew me, had me skipping school. Valencia's boyfriend, Volvo, had me making moves. Mama raised me, Pop, I miss you. God help me forgive him, I got some issues. Mickey cleaned my ears, Annie shampooed my hair. Eric was fly, I used to steal his gear. I was the baby boy, I could do no wrong. Years going past fast, let's move along. Kitchen table, that's where I hone my skills. Jazz made me believe this was real. Labels turned me down, couldn't foresee. Clark sought me out, Dame believed. Primo laced me, Ski did too. Reasonable doubt, classic, shoulda went triple. Mama loved me.
You are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Ray Jeezy and myself, Ole. And the homie Will T is out. But we are part of Empire Media. That's empiremedia.com. All right, right now we have Kevin Nibley from Talk Nats on the line. Kev, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going good, man. Usually it's wild because we don't talk Nats usually, Kev. Like on social media, we talk about wrestling and we talk about like... sometimes even Commander stuff. So it's good to talk Nats again, to be honest with you.
yeah, it's been a while. Though, yeah, it's like we're doing this during AEW Dynamite, which I know is a show you never want to miss. But you know, I was good. I recorded it. I put it on the DVR. Okay. So we'll check that out when
man.
We're done.
Yeah. All in, man.
I'm excited.
It's,
yeah,
I mean, it's the biggest show, right? The biggest show in terms of attendance. So yeah, definitely. All right, but we are here to talk Nats, so we're gonna talk Nats, okay? All right, the Nationals are 58-68 and are playing competitive baseball, like real competitive baseball. Nats signed manager Davey Martinez to a contract extension and are working on a contract extension with GM Mike Rizzo. Do you think Davey deserved the extension.
Yeah, I think he did, actually. I know that a lot of times that I've been on in the last couple of years, we were kind of burying a guy and talking about how, you know, much the team's underachieved. But this season, what he's done with this roster is pretty incredible. At the beginning of the year, the Nats were picked in Las Vegas to win about 59 or 60 games. And they've done that almost, I think they're 58 right now. So they're really overachieving. And when you look at the roster, you know, they have Josiah Gray and Mackenzie Gores, pretty solid pitchers, but you know, they don't have an ace. They don't really have a slugger. They don't have anyone that's going to hit 30, 40 home runs. They've been pretty competitive with, you know, a couple prospects like CJ Abrams and K-Bear Ruiz who are playing well along with Lane Thomas. But mostly, you know, they've had a lot of guys like Alex Call and, you know, Blake Rutherford and like a lot of kind of prospects sort of at the end of their rope and players who aren't, you know, really very heralded. And he's done a lot with his team. So I think given the way that they've done this season, he deserves another 2 years to see if he, you know, in 2 years, the Nats' better prospects like Dylan Cruz and James Whittle arrive, and he deserves a chance to manage that team and see if he can, you know, be the manager for the next playoff team the Nats have.
I'm going to surprise you. I agree. I think he does too. I feel like I've been so tough on Davey Martinez. but I do, I respect, I, to me, and we'll talk about it later, but in terms of, it's one of our social media questions, but I just feel like this is the best managerial job he's done. And yeah, you got a World Series under your belt and you're going to always, people are going to always focus on that. But just in terms of everything you mentioned, the lack of, I won't say lack of talent because there is some young talent, but you know what I mean? Like you don't have an ace. You don't have a power hitter. Like, you know what I mean? Like you got guys who are still trying to figure it out. What does it take to be a successful major league player? And he doesn't have any of a guy. He doesn't have a guy that you can lean on and say, carry my squad. Like, carry my squad to the promised land. Do this and the other. He doesn't have that type of guy right now. He has guys, you know, being educated to be that guy, but he doesn't have a guy at the moment right now. So, to me, like, to be 58 and 68 to a point where everybody thought you were going to be the worst team in baseball, you were going to rival the Oakland A's, and you see how bad Oakland is. And look at them now. They're 10 games under 500. Which somebody would say, another person would be like, well, we're talking about 10 games under 500. But understand where this team was projected to be. 10 games under 500 in the division where you got, when you're going against the best team in baseball in the Braves, you got the Phillies, you had the overpaid Mets who underachieved, but they were still off, just looking at the roster, was a team that should have been a postseason team.
I think it was the biggest salary in the history of baseball. The Mets spent more money than any team ever this year.
And then you got the Nats, who didn't spend any money for real, and had, like, young players and only 10 games under 500. And I believe right now they may be last in the NL East, but they're, like, right there with the Mets, though. And they could still – but, again, it's still good enough to me to warrant, like, consideration. I know it sounds bad because, I mean, not bad, but he's being in consideration for, like, manager of the year, to be honest with you.
What's kind of amazing is, they're like, I believe, a half game behind the Mets going into – they don't look like they're going to win tonight. But what's even funnier is I think they're a game and a half behind the Padres, you know, who gave them all these players.
There you go.
For Juan Soto. I remember, I think I was on your show about a year ago this time. And I was one of the only people who were like, you know, trade Soto. I love that trade. You know, get all these young guys. And here I thought it would take 2 or 3 years to pay off, but it's only been a year. And, you know, here you are. And it's like, would you even trade CJ Abrams?
No.
Would you trade 5 years of CJ Abrams for one more year of Soto?
No.
Probably not.
No.
You know, so that trade's looking really good. And James Wood, who is the best prospect in the trade, hasn't even come up yet. He should be here next year. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, the rebuild's been going – it's gone – they're ahead of schedule. Like, I didn't think they'd be to a point where they are now until, like, maybe a year from now. So they're definitely way ahead of schedule, and Davey deserves some credit for that.
I totally agree. So what's taking so long with Rizzo's extension deal then?
I don't know. They reported – I think it was in The Athletic that, you know, they were discussing terms and they were quote unquote close. I have a hard time seeing Rizzo not, you know, I'd have a hard time seeing them not extend Rizzo. Cause honestly, when you look at, the way that this team has been built in the first place, you know, in 2012 and then now kind of rebuilt from the, you know, when they blew it up in 2021, you know, getting rid of Max and Trey and then Soto later, you know, Rizzo is, I think, more, you know, I credit Rizzo more than Davey at this point, just in terms of how he saw an opportunity, you know, like Josiah looks like a really solid two or three, and he's only, you know, in his second real season pitching. So you think in a couple of years, Josiah could even be closer, you know, to a one or two. You know, Ruiz is starting to look like one, you know, pretty nice hitting catcher. Obviously, CJ Abrams is looking like a stud as a leadoff hitter. You know, he looks like he weighs about 110 pounds, but he looks like he could hit like 25 home runs. I think he's stolen, you know, like 26 bases in a row or something crazy. Rizzo's done a really good job of rebuilding this club pretty quick. And you know, hopefully they'll extend him. And then hopefully also the ownership situation will get a little bit settled and they can buy some pitching. Like, you know, right now you look at, you know, they have Cruz and Wood and Brady House and you know, a couple of hitters on the way, maybe even as soon as next year. You know, if the Nats buy one, you know, top end starter, you know, that they could be a playoff team sooner than later. So, you know, I would definitely extend Rizzo and I would give him a chance to, you know, shepherd this next competitive era, hopefully.
So I do want to get your opinion. So, you know, the poll, put a poll out there, and I mentioned it earlier, so it's not, this is, I'm sounding a little redundant, but the poll was out there that I felt like this was Davey's best year as, I mean, the poll was out there saying that, do you think that is this Davey's best year as a manager, period, right? Yeah. You know, I already gave my opinion, but in terms of Twitter, 42% said yes, but 58% said no. I guess everybody's still in that, you know, the championship. But for you, I want to get your opinion. What is this to you? Is this Davey's best year as a manager?
It could be. I'd like to see how they finish. You know, I mean, if it's something where if they finish strong and they close to within, you know, if they win like 75 games, then yeah, I mean, that might be better than 2019. Because 2019, like you said, I mean, that's when you look back at that roster, it was pretty stacked. Yeah. Yeah. you had Max and Strass as a 1-2. You had Corbin's best year ever in his entire career.
Turner.
You know, yeah, Trey, Juan Soto, Rendon, you know, and then like even some of their utility guys, you know, that was the Howie Kendrick hit like 330 that year, something crazy. You even had guys like Brian Dozier hit 20 home runs and
Zimmerman, clutch. It's just so
fun. You had Yan Gomes and Kurt Suzuki both had good years. They definitely had a lot of talent, a lot of veteran talent on that team. Even like Matt Adams had a, you know, a month or two that season where he was hitting 3-run homers, winning them games. So they did have a lot of talent on that team. You know, I think 2019, I think on the whole, so if we're just going to stop right now and project that the season goes the way it's gone and the Nats win 70-75, I would say this is his best job. You know, in 2019, I think where he did a great, great job was just in the postseason.
Yes,
I don't know if he did it for the whole season, but in the postseason, he did a really good job of, you know, beating some loaded pitching staffs with the Dodgers and Astros.
I agree.
With literally just like Max and Strass. Like if you actually look back in 2019, if you throw out the Cardinals series, they won, you know, games started by Corbin or Sanchez. But in every other series in that run, they only ever won games started by Strasburg or Scherzer in like the whole playoff run to win. So he won a World Series off of two pitchers, which is pretty amazing. So I give him credit for that postseason run. But the season on a whole, this might be his best job, especially because this roster does. Yeah, like we said, they don't have an ace. They don't have any sluggers, really. He's done it, you know, a lot of smoke and mirrors. And like their bullpen isn't really loaded either, you know, to be honest. So he's done a very good job.
So Kevin, you kind of already alluded to feeling as though the rebuild is a bit ahead of schedule. You say you expected 2 to 3 years. But how does the situation with Rizzo as well as ownership impact the rebuild moving forward?
I expect them to re-sign Rizzo. I think if I had to just take a wild stab, like nothing, I'm just like guessing, just pure conjecture. I think maybe, you know, the White Sox just fired their GM. Rizzo's from Chicago. Maybe he's like using that. Maybe he's using that to like get a, you know, a little extra money out of the learners or something, you know. I don't know. I mean, you know, but I would expect Rizzo to stay because he's already through the toughest part of the rebuild. you know, he already had that, you know, 107 loss season or whatever it was last year, you know, to get someone like Dylan Cruz, who's going to probably be up, you know, maybe even opening day next year. So I think Rizzo is going to be in place, and I think he's going to do a good job. I do think with ownership, that's the issue. You know, there are all these rumors last year that they were trying to sell the team. Then this year they came out and said, well, maybe we're not going to do that. And everything's kind of been put on pause. So I think for the Nats to take the next step in their rebuild, they're going to need to spend a little bit on free agents. And particularly starting pitching is what I see they need. You know, they could also use maybe I think they could use like a slugger at first base DH to replace Dom Smith or Meneses. You know, just someone like you could plug in, you know, just a power bat, basically a little more power than either of those two guys. But yeah, you know, but if ownership steps up and spends like they did, you know, during the first run where around like 2011, they signed Worth and then they brought Scherzer in. And, you know, if ownership steps up and increases the payroll now that some of the younger prospects and low cost players are locked in, then yeah, I think that the Nats will be a playoff team. If not next year, definitely by 2025, for sure.
That'd be good for the area. And learn from what the Commanders did. There's nothing wrong with going with new ownership.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Good Lord. Yeah. I thought Snyder was gonna own that team till the day I died, to be honest.
See, look how the vibe is now. So and Nats fans, I'm just saying, if you're not happy with the learners, hey, it can happen. It can change the vibe. It changes the whole vibe. Just letting you know. This is an example. What changing an owner can do for a whole fan base, to be honest with you. But the Nats have always had a decent fan base, so I won't even act like the Nats fan base has been suspect. It's always been a decent fan base. Well, Kevin, thanks for being on the show. Before we let you go, tell our listeners how they can catch Talk Nats and about how they can catch any content you guys got coming out.
Yeah, of course. Just please visit talknats.com. It's the best community on the internet to talk about baseball. It's a really quick plug. There's actually an article in the New Yorker of all magazines this last week that said Talk Nats was an alternative to Twitter. It was kind of crazy. So that's the New Yorker. The New Yorker knows about Talk Nats. So that's how cool it is. I think it's at Talk Nats on Twitter as well. Talknats.com. And then I'm just at K_Nibley. On Twitter, and I think I'm also on Spaces and all that other stuff. That Blue Sky, I don't know.
He's on Threads. I'm on Threads.
GeoCities, MySpace. I don't know. Whatever. You know, I talk about baseball, movies, as well. Like I said, we talk about we get into AEW, WWF sometimes. So just a little everything.
Showed your age. That man said WWF. You just showed your age, right?
Oh,
there,
I did. Yeah, that is true. I did show my. Man, yeah.
Hey, I slip up too.
WWE has Cody. That's the difference. I know you watched the American Nightmare on Peacock. That was dope.
Did you watch
the American
Nightmare?
I didn't see the American.
He's so pro AEW.
I am. Yeah. He's dead to me. He left, right? Yeah, no. But I haven't. I heard Triple H called AEW a second rate promotion. Heard about it, but I didn't watch it. I he's got to be savvy because his father in law, like, he thought he had the big job, and then his father in law just came in and took his job from him, and basically Vince is running it again. So anyway, whatever.
Vince may not right now. Well, that's a whole different topic. Yeah. That's a whole different topic. But I will say this though, go Kenny Omega. That's my guy.
He's great. Yeah.
The Young Bucks are gonna go to WWE at some point.
They're not. They signed an extension. They messed up. They should have though. Oh. They should be hanging with Cody. They messed up. Go see a punk. He's starting more drama. All right, Kev, thanks for being on. Appreciate you.
All right, talk to you later, guys.
Right, talk to you later, man.
We might as well skip this break. Son.
We are. We definitely skipping the break. You know what I mean? I had to talk to Kevin about AEW.
It's all good.
All right. So anyway, I had to get my thoughts together. All right, we're skipping the break. Last night, Aja Wilson tied the WNBA single game scoring record with a 53-point effort against the Atlanta Dream. Ray, what makes her so freaking dominant?
Well, we had Chastity Melvin on the show a while back, and she talked about the glory days of the WNBA. And we think the glory days, the first two names that come to mind are Cynthia Cooper and Cheryl Swoops. Cool. Behind that, it's several names. Teaspoon, you got you got Rebecca Lobo, you have Lisa Leslie. There are many names that come behind that. And there were so many great players at the time. But at the same time, even with all those great players, certain ones stood out. Like I just said, the first two our names stood out. Then, for me, at least as a fan, Maya Moore was that person. I love Taurasi. I love a lot of players. But Maya Moore was, she was the best player by far. And I think we're in a place right now where Asia Wilson is the best player by far. There's nobody close to her that can, you can say, well, Deladon at one point was, but Deladon, of course, has been injured, and she's older now. I think she's content with, she won her title.
Yeah.
So she's, let's just say, I don't want to sound negative, but I guess on the, she's on her down, not the downside, but she's on the latter part of her career. Yeah. There we go. Asia Wilson is ascending.
Yeah.
And like I said, I can't think of anybody who,
Breonna
Stewart can hoop. Yes, I feel like she's not driving 53 out there though, but she wins titles though.
Yeah.
And she fills the stat sheet. So Breonna Stewart is a good one. But in terms of the way Asia plays, a style of play, I don't think it compares.
Yeah,
I think her style of play is entertaining. People want to watch it. Yeah. WNBA viewership is up. It still could be better. The marketing still has some stuff in terms of, you know, visibility where they need to improve that.
Of course.
Because the league itself is huge in like China and other markets where the WNBA is is not there yet, which would bless them in terms of becoming a global brand. But anyway, I think she's somebody who could be the face of the league. I don't think Breonna Stewart can be. That's the difference. No knock on her. Breonna Stewart is dope.
Yeah.
Now there are some other great scorers in the league. Dawana Bonner comes to mind. Many again good players, but she to me is head and shoulders above everybody else. Yeah. That's why I think she's already an all time great.
No, I agree. I think she's already all time great, and just by watching her game, like this thing, like she does, she fills the box sheet. She's just not like she's a defensive juggernaut. She's an offensive scorer. She's a great rebounder. It's like there's nothing she can't do. And even on the stop in the, like you said, the eye test of watching a hooper, she's got a lot in her bag. Like a lot in her bag. It's not like she's just taller than somebody, you know, or more agile than somebody. She's actually skilled. You know what I mean? She has a step back, Jay. If you watched her in college in South Carolina, she was more inside than anything, right? She was predominantly inside. She look at her WNBA, you see that she's changed. She's brought out more to her game. She's shooting the three ball. She can do her mid range game is amazing in terms of, and what she can do with her footwork is crazy. Like she has good footwork in terms of doing step backs in the mid range. She's left handed, so obviously she's always going to have that over somebody. She can go power strong to the left. She finishes to the basket. She even watching when you know a lot of old timers, like they're going to be stuck in their people, right? They'll be like, well, this person couldn't play in our time. Like when you watch, we were watching. No, you know what I mean. But when you watch, like, all right, for instance, prime example, like Lisa Leslie, right, was dope, right, growing up in terms of a hooper.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
Tina Thompson,
I'm telling you this, if just off that stylistic point of just watching both of them play, Asia Wilson is way more talented to me than Lisa Leslie.
Ooh, interesting point. I don't know about that.
She
has
more in her bag than Lisa Leslie. No knock on Lisa. Lisa Leslie can go, but this girl to me. Like 53 is tough.
It's hard to compare errors. It really is. Like, for example, Alyssa Thomas. I would love to see Las Vegas take on Connecticut. If Alyssa Thomas, the former Terp, we're here in the DMV, she can get over the hump and win a title. To me, she's already all-time great. The way she's played with shoulder injuries, she's had triple-double after triple-double. She's a baller.
Yeah.
And as I think about her potentially going back to play in that era where Lisa Leslie and the players talked about Cynthia Cooper, where they play, I think she would just be right there in the middle of the pack with them.
Who?
Alyssa Thomas.
Oh, okay.
But and Asia Wilson, I think she would be dope, but
I think she'd be over him, bro.
No, I don't see that.
I don't see that.
Again, that's how she's playing her era. All
right, I said Griffin from Sacramento.
Yeah.
She used to give people work. I like Griffin, dude, but she...
No, she was older. See, here's the thing. The league started kind of late. So some of the greater players...
I agree. I'm talking about when that league... Oh, no, you're right. Yeah, you're totally
WNBA,
right.
If they had a WNBA from Jump Street...
I agree.
Then I think Yolanda Griffin, we wouldn't even be talking about that because she was that real.
Yeah, exactly. But even to me, I think if it was younger, Lisa Leslie would have been a lot better. Because they call her in a transitional point in time period.
In a way.
Like, you didn't get the best. That wasn't the best Lisa Leslie. That definitely wasn't the best Cheryl Swoops.
Cheryl Swoops is pretty dang good.
But man, that wasn't the best Cheryl Swoops though. Like,
you don't think so?
Nah, she's coming pregnant and everything.
Well, yeah, but she got in better shape after she did, the pregnancy.
The Cheryl Swoops before that was trill. Like, that's just my point of view. I mean, that's my belief. I feel like you got Cheryl Swoops, but you ain't get the best Cheryl Swoops.
I'm not sure, dude. I mean, like, it was some players back then. Holzclaw. I mean, players that
Holzclaw could go.
Right.
Yeah, she could.
And we're like, not even mentioning her in that era. I'm just saying, like, it's hard to really compare those eras. Like I said, that era, as I'm gonna use, I just said her name, Chastity Melvin's words. Yeah. It was special, yeah. And it's hard to compare. But in terms of her being all time great in this era. Yeah, I think you got. Come on now, just her body work, and they're title contenders. They're leading every title year. Contenders this year, she's not every year, MVP but this already. Year. They're leading title contenders, and I think again they should face off against somebody who's going to be competitive. That's what I want to see. To where it'll mean even more when you can beat some of the better players. Which is why when Candace Parker won a championship with Chicago, it was like, dang, she's really that.
Yeah,
she's that girl. So. I think, yeah, all-time great, no doubt. It's just dope because you mentioned comparing eras. We don't do that with the WNBA as much as we do with the NBA.
Do. I feel like when I watch, I feel like there's more skill. This is the truth, though. I ain't going to lie. There's more skill
today?
in the WNBA compared to back then. Overall skill. Though the ones that you mentioned, I just like them. I think they played harder. And I think – and I just – I have a – I'm always going to romanticize – for them over like than any other era of the WNBA, because something about that first group, to your point, like it was a star of a new league, obviously, but also it was the heart and soul of what they play with, like Witherspoon. I love watching her play because she just, there's a mentality. The mentality is different. Like the drive to make this successful, the drive to win for your team. It was a lot involved in that group of ladies that started off the WNBA.
Man, there was some ballers back then. Yeah. Listen, I'm gonna say this.
I'm not saying they couldn't ball. I'm not saying that.
Look,
at all.
These girls were on Martin.
Yes.
Including Dawn Staley. She didn't get her opportunity to really play at her in her
prime. Right?
Prime. Yeah. But what I'll say is this. When the ladies back then, USA team, played anybody else, they smashed them. Today, it's a little closer, bro.
I'm just saying.
Hammond couldn't even make that squad back then. She ended up going to Russia.
But she couldn't make this squad either.
Becky Hammond was a hooper.
I like Becky Hammond. I do. Stop. She was a hooper, bro. I watched the New York, bro. I like Becky Hammond. Like, you're right. Like, I ain't watch. Dude, I used to watch this. I used to watch them religiously.
Larkathia Jones, Lake Jones, she was a baller. But again, we're not even mentioning her. I just feel like that era, you can't compare this era to that era. I'm sorry. But that's another discussion for another day.
Man, look, I think – well, I'm not comparing everybody to this era, but I'm comparing this one. This one.
Asia is that talented. Of course she could be. She could be a ball in any era. Yeah. I'm not saying that. I'm just – in terms of, like, the top stars, bro, like, I think she would be right there somewhere in the middle of that. I don't think it would be like she would be a standout. Today she's a standout.
I think she'd be a standout.
She could be.
I think there's –
it's a great discussion.
I know. I don't know if there are bigs who could mess with her. That's all. I don't think there would be bigs who could mess with her. Like, the players that we're referring to are, like, more guard-oriented. I don't think there's bigs who can mess with her.
Well, I can't give you every name off the top of my head right now.
Footwork is better than any big
that you've seen.
In that WNBA.
And that doesn't mean anything.
In the WNBA? In that era of the WNBA. You know, I watched that.
Offensively.
That her footwork is better than anybody in that era of the WNBA. Okay. And I watched that. I watched that religiously.
Shout out to the greats. Recently, the Mystics, they gave a tribute to Nicki McRae. Yeah, Vicky Bullitt came out. That brought back memories because that's when, again, this league was getting kicked off.
It was
so community-based back then. It still is, though, because of the stadium location and just some of the advocacy that the organization does. They give out tickets. They're still doing good work. It's just a better atmosphere in a way now because it's a smaller arena, more intimate environment. Even though, to me, the stands are not as full as it was that championship year. I covered the team that season, and it was dope.
It was lit.
So got to get that back.
Yeah, it was lit.
Got to get that back. But, yeah, I'm focused, like I said, on my HBCU ladies. So I'm hoping that some of these ladies, including our former guest, Destiny Howe, will get an opportunity to play at that level.
Me too,
man. When there's not a lot of roster spaces, unfortunately.
Which is unfortunate.
That's what you say, unfortunately.
It is, man. I love my HBCUs.
Yes, sir.
had a poll, but it was like limited votes. So I don't feel like it's not fair to read.
Okay.
It's not a real poll to read for real.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But I do, real talk though, if you see this child's stats though, in terms of where she is as leader, the leaderboard, she's everywhere, which says a lot.
Oh, you got to give her flowers, bro. No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a generational talent. Like, 53, bro.
Yeah.
I don't care what league. 53 is 53.
Pee Wee Kirkland scored like 135 points.
Great. That means he's amazing.
Yeah. Wilt scored 100.
Huh?
But people diminish Wilt because they say he played against smaller guys. But Wilt could have played in any era. It's 100. The same thing.
100 is 100. If you play basketball,
it's a hard.
Score 100.
It's a hard feat.
Score 100 gets bumped.
Anyway, tomorrow night, NFL Network, the Atlanta Falcons take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Check out Desmond Ritter.
I actually thought about talking about Atlanta, too.
Atlanta actually can be decent if they have a decent defense.
I love the running back from Texas.
Oh. Bijan, he's the third stringer, quote unquote. Man, that dude can catch out the backfield. He's real.
The third stringer. Who called him a third stringer?
He's starting a depth chart. It's intentional, though. It was supposed to, many thought it would change, you know, based on him being a rookie and all, but it hasn't changed yet, which is funny. It don't matter. Drake London has looked pretty good this preseason, but
that's good. You can take a lot out of receivers in preseason.
Feeling decent about the upgrades on defense and how it might turn out. So check us out tomorrow.
You should feel good. You should always feel good.
DMV, check out my Falcons, baby.
Yeah, I'm saying.
I know you're sad about your new owner and all, but hey. And the Steelers look pretty good in that division.
Man, that Pickett looked good. Can we talk about Pickett looks good?
Pickett looks good. The AFC North is a tough division. Man, if Deshaun Watson balls,
he's going to ball.
It's going to be crazy.
I'm telling you, like all the haters, listen to me. Deshaun is going to ball.
Okay.
He's going to ball.
I hope you don't jinx him.
I'm not going to jinx him.
You've been struggling in your predictions lately.
I had a good bounce back because Antoine. So,
that was a prediction, man.
It's a spoiler. It's a fact. I'm back, baby.
I don't know about that, but
I'm back.
The NFL is back. That's my point.
Sorry, and my man Anthony Joshua helped me out too. So I'm back. I'm back, baby.
Okay.
I'm back. Hey, look, you take everything you can take, bro. I'm gonna take that one.
All right. Deshaun Watson is out for a much better year. I agree. He's gonna be better than last season.
Better than last season.
But I'm just saying that division is so stacked.
It is stacked.
All four teams should make the playoffs.
They should
unless Joey Burrow don't come back.
He hurt. They should, like, teams should, like, take advantage of that ASAP. Like,
but they're such a good team late in the season all the time.
They always turn on late, though. Facts. Hey, subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, follow us on Twitter at Urban Sports Scene, IG at Urban Sports Scene, and like our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Make sure you subscribe to the Urban Sports Scene YouTube channel as well. Like Ray and I were talking about earlier, we're gonna go video soon. So next week may be the last time we go audio. No, maybe I'm gonna put it out.
Yeah,
there.
I will not be here next week. So we'll see what my future looks like. But you already know.
Yeah,
Urban Sports Scene. Check us out. Like he said, subscribe to that YouTube channel, which is growing. We're gonna have more content. It's some HBCU stuff coming your way as well. So. Dope. Check out that game Saturday as well.
Yeah.
Jackson State versus South Carolina State. Man, the kickoff. Everybody's going to be looking
at
the Swag MEAC Challenge. I think it's just a great platform for the HBCUs. No matter what school you went to, ABC, one. I think it's on ABC. So no matter what school you went to, you got to get behind these two teams. If you, of course, go to Jackson, support the homie, Isaiah Guthrie. He's been on this show multiple times. That's my guy. I'm glad he's getting back out on the field. TC Taylor getting to put that – Deion Sanders talk behind him. That Coach Prime talk behind him is going to be amazing. And Coach Buddy Pugh, that's our guy.
Yeah, exactly. So.
All-time great. What a great time for HBCU.
It is,
bro.
Though, man. Real talk, man.
Dang.
Real talk. That's real talk, for real. No, he's right, though. Ray's right. Hey, this is a good time. And also,
Virginia Union, we need you in the MEAC. We need Bowie State and Virginia Union to take that leap of faith and lead the CIAA and come to the MEAC. I love Jackie McWilliams. I love Jackie McWilliams, but we need those two teams. I'm sorry.
I love
her, but we need those two teams. Help your sister out. Help your sister Sonya out. give us those two teams.
How many teams do they have already, though? In the
don't give me a line. I'm not sure. I can't count how many teams they have, but I'm saying
they can afford to give us.
Two.
That's what I'm saying. I'm only being
they can
real.
Afford to give us those two based on demographic. That'd be perfect.
Yeah,
you got Morgan, Coppin, UMES, and then you have Bowie State right
and Morgan,
here.
And Coppin ain't got a football team, so yeah.
Then you exactly. both schools got football teams. Both schools are pretty good at football and decent at basketball. Yeah, yeah. It would be a great fit in terms of location. Virginia Union wouldn't be far from North Carolina Central, from South Carolina State, from Norfolk State. Everybody would be right there in the same area. We need those two teams. We need expansion. Everybody's talking about these expansions that's going to take place amongst HBCUs, and the MEAC is not part of the discussion. It's getting on my nerves, and I'm nervous that Howard's still going to leave at some point. So we need help.
Man, Howard shouldn't leave. I think they got a good situation right now.
They do, but
their basketball program.
Howard is pretty darn marketable.
I know.
You got the Jordan brand.
I think they
deal.
Sometimes
you got every sport is good. We talking about track, soccer, freaking golf, swimming. Like Howard is it.
But sometimes you just want to. You want to take over the conference you're able to take over. You know what I mean? So I just feel like this is a.
It's a good conference. It's all about money, my brother.
They're always gonna make money.
Well, see, I don't think football wise they're ready to make that leap to like the CAA or any other conference. Yeah. That's why Hampton has struggled.
But
basketball wise, they can compete in any conference.
They can,
for the most
but you
part.
Always, but you only move. You move because of football, because football is the money. That's how it is. Even you see this PWIs.
But this season, just like we were forecasting, MEAC basketball season was going to be dope, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
This season, we're not sure because every team is pretty much different. However, MEAC football,
you're
talking about Central and Howard?
South
Carolina State and Central?
I'll go even further than that. I think SWAC, the MEAC, I think their football is going to be off the charts.
What SWAC is? Yeah. Oh, SWAC is, yeah, because FAMU is going to be good.
Yeah.
Southern's going to be dope.
You got the unknown.
Alcorn is a sleeper to win it. I'm telling you, I'm excited, bro.
Hey, I'm going to see what Graham's going to do.
But listen, I am MEAC Dad going it. So, Buddy Pugh, we rooting for you this weekend. We rooting for Guthrie.
We are.
We want him to play well and then lose.
Yes. This is a fact. That is a fact. I'm going to hope my man get a pick. Let my man get a pick six. You know what I'm saying?
Man, that's a lot.
Man, pick six is great. Hey, I'm all about playing.
I love Jackson, though. I love Jackson. I can't really pick sides, but I always got root for the MEAC. Last year, the SWAC won that game. Howard lost, of course. Alabama State
won
that game.
Who won the Celebration Bowl?
Oh, of course, the MEAC always wins.
Okay, there you go. Exactly. Always.
Central, Davius Richard.
Always wins.
He's like the second coming of Eric McNair. Everybody's saying it. He's that real.
Okay.
He's so real. Okay. I love that dude. I didn't even interview him out there. I called Khalil Baker, though. Khalil Baker's going to the league, too, I think.
Bro, we're
going to
see.
Darian Broken Burst. A lot of great players out there with HBCU.
And a lot of folks saying South Carolina State, they back. A lot of folks. That's on the Twitter.
It's a quiet confidence.
That's on the X-Sphere. Can't call Twitter.
Listen, but they're picked to, in every major publication, they're picked to finish somewhere like around Norfolk State. They're picked to finish after Morgan, bro. So I don't know. Morgan's going to be good, too.
Oh, I think Morgan's going to be good. I think.
They need to
Coach
be
Wilson talented. Coach Wilson.
It's gonna be a dope season for MEAC football.
There's a lot of challenges.
And then we need to add those two teams after the season. So, hey, look out for that, guys. We're going to be a 10-team league next year because Virginia Union and Bowie State, well, one of the two are coming to the MEAC. Sorry, Commissioner Williams. We need it. It's all HBCU love out here.
Hey, man. I love my HBCUs. Hey, check out our...
Stop.
You know what? Forget it. Hey, thanks. Thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate y'all. Anyway, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for IGIS. Yig. Deuces. A mega... Lead us out, big homie.